My name is Missy Ware. I'm the Cable Broadband Administrator in Montgomery County, Maryland, and glad that you're here today. How many folks in here are from a community access station? And how many from government access? And anybody from E? Okay, anybody else in this? All three, okay. Anybody out here doing youth programs? Okay, all right, okay, good. Okay, so we're glad you're here. We have a great panel, and what we're gonna try and do is we have some clips and things to show you. We have some discussion that we're gonna talk about, and if you've got questions or you have things, I encourage you to jump on in, because we want to try to basically make it as accessible as possible. So with that, let me go first and introduce you to the folks that we have here on the panel. First, we have Amy Lucky from Zero Divide. They are primarily up here because they have funded many programs, some of the folks in this room. So they kind of bring a wealth of knowledge of some of the things that they're looking for. We have Nicola Pine from St. Paul Neighborhood Network. We have Myra Margolin from Wide Angle Youth Media in Baltimore. And we have Jay April from Akaku on Maui. Jay, we would like to thank you for offering gender diversity to our panel.
It's nice to be chosen.
So I'll put these up there, and we'll load this presentation onto the Nutella website so maybe some people could get the addresses and have some of this. And I'm going to go to the next slide, and then we'll show some of the clips. But I also wanted to let people know that these are other... One of the reasons why we did this panel is for some people we started to do this, we realized that there are lots of folks out there who are doing youth media programs, but that there isn't really sort of a collective area, and somebody said, well, why don't you put together a wiki page? So maybe we will do that. So that people could share that knowledge and the resources together and realize that if you want to enhance your youth programs or start a youth program, that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's lots of resources that are out there, and that's what we kind of want to introduce people to. So Spy Hop Productions is based in Salt Lake City, and they were funded by?
We have a BTOP grant, a Broadband Opportunities Program grant, which we have seven subrecipients. And Spy Hop is one of those subrecipients. And as well CMAT and Akaku and Portland Community Media. Four of the subrecipients are community media organizations.
Great. So these are some of the other ones. Kathy Bisbee from CMAP will be here tomorrow, I believe. Portland Community Media, they are here representing. Real Girls is in Seattle. I just thought this was kind of interesting because I just wanted to point out there's DCTV that's in New York City, and then there's DCTV that's in DC. And I also want to point out we have Gandhi Brigade, their youth media group, and they're in Silver Spring, Maryland. And so you can get these things, so you'll have that information. And with that, we're going to try to multimedia here. Now, if I was really organized, I would have like embedded all the links in the PowerPoint or had a DVD, but so goes. So what we're going to do is we're going to see if we can do this. First, what I want to do was to run through is, I just wanted to point out for you, just to kind of run through on some of these, and some of the people that I just introduced, these are their actual websites, and you can see that this is for BAVAC. They're generically, if you want to talk about the BAVAC program, Ingrid's not here. But BAVAC is actually, for those of you who did the production yesterday, they were at their facility. They actually have a fairly large and robust program in which they have three different programs that they're offering. One is they have a year-long internship program. They have a hip-hop record label that they produce. And the third one, I don't remember what it was, but you can see the Bump Records, the Digital Pathway, the Factory, those kinds of things. SPNN, Nicole, you want to talk, briefly introduce your program?
Sure. St. Paul Neighborhood Network, our youth programs, we run a number of after-school and summer youth media programs with high school students and middle school aged youth. We run a program during the school year, it's called Set It Up, and it's a teen-produced show exploring issues affecting youth in St. Paul. And our youth intern program is a paid 7-week internship. It's a credit-based program, and it's also for high school students, and it's a application-based program. And then the Neighborhood Video Project is a year-round community-based and school-based program exploring history in three different neighborhoods in St. Paul.
All right. And then Wide Angle East Media, this is their website. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we're really little. We have 6 staff members, 2 of them are AmeriCorps. We run 4 core programs, 2 of them are for high school students, 2 of them are for middle school students. Our middle school programs are community-based, so they take place in partnership with public libraries in different neighborhoods in Baltimore, and generally neighborhoods where the youth population is underserved, which kind of describes most of Baltimore. And those are kind of introductory 12-week-long programs. We've got 12 kids in those programs. They get service learning credits. They produce team projects together. They're 10 to 15-year-olds. Then we have 2 high school programs. One is an intensive media production program where they learn video skills. It's year-round. We have 8 to 12 kids in that program, and they produce sort of longer and more individualized projects, less team projects, more individualized. And then we also have a youth media festival, which is a citywide festival to bring together youth-produced artwork and media from different organizations and different kids. And we have a committee of 8 to 12 kids who organize and run that with the support and collaboration of a full-time staff member. So those are our core programs. In addition, we do lots of smaller workshops and contract work and fee-for-service work in partnerships with schools and other community-based organizations. We work with middle and high school students.
All right, so I'm not sure which one of these we're connected to, but it seems to be, there must be many people on it because now it's snowing. So with that, we're gonna go to Project Y-Beam in Maui, maybe.
Maybe we get there. Maui's far away. My name's Jerry April, and I run a public access station in Maui, Akakum Maui Community Television. We cover PENG. We're a very innovative outfit. We've been around for about 15 years. I've been there when I was on the board in 2000, took over as CEO in 2007. But our watchword is innovation, because especially with kids, we've been training kids for a long, long time. We have lots of different age levels that come through our programs. And basically, you know, with the video camera, it's constantly changing. And believe me, we've used everything from little flip cameras to this device, which we're going to be talking about. And I want to thank Amy's organization, Zero Divide, for helping us, recognizing our innovation and helping us to get some BTOP money to make broadband adoption happen on Maui. And what's interesting about Maui is Maui County is 3 islands, Molokai and Lanai. There are places in Hawaii, in order to get broadband, you got to get on a plane. I mean, it's a very, very remote, arguably the most remote places on Earth that exist in Maui County. But my apologies to people who live on Kauai and Niihau. But it's a very interesting program. I'll explain the unit in a little bit. But our plan is to train approximately 500 kids over the next 2 or 3 years and have those kids export that knowledge to any number of people, their parents, their friends, etc. We're getting a tremendous amount of attention for this program, which is basically internet-based, iPod-based. And I'll explain that more when we get to the presentation.
Okay, well, we're waiting for the internet. So you want to go ahead and explain this one, and okay. I'll get this up while we're...
Where's the internet?
I don't know where... On the computer?
No, because we had some problems before with the location.
Okay, because, you know, it was interesting. I didn't... Earlier, we didn't have any issues. All right.
So are you not on right now? Essentially, we have a site which you may or may not be able to get up on. Yeah, there it is. It's MauiTube.org. Obviously, we ripped off the YouTube moniker because kids like that, we like that. It's easily understood. Our idea is to take mobile devices using Wi-Fi, to send news pieces from any place in Maui County to our proprietary website or to our channels. We are now revamping one of our channels to specifically deal with 24-hour news, webcams, and broadband adoption. And the first thing I'd like to do, if you can do it, is, oh, it's not there.
We're
speed test. How many people have seen a speed test, or done a speed test? Okay, that's not even half the room. It's like less than a third of the room. If you can hit the speed test button. And,
already know.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty pathetic. But you can do this on our site. You can do it on any number of generic sites. But if you go to akaku.org or mauitube.org, you can do a speed test. And that data will go directly to the national broadband mapping people so that we can determine how bad our broadband speeds are in Hawaii. Okay, so this is going to give the upload and download speeds from, I believe, the Wi-Fi system in this room. I don't know whether you're on Light Squared or whether you're on the hotel system. But as you can see, it's laboring.
You know, it's very interesting because we tested this after everyone left at the other session, and
Now, the FCC says that broadband is, what, 4 or 5 megabits down and 1 megabit up? We're not exactly experiencing broadband in this room right now. So we can talk all we want about how exciting it all is, but when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Where I live, I have a fiber connection to Time Warner, big company, right? Biggest company, entertainment company in the world. I get about less than 6 megabits down and only about 3/4 of a megabit up, sometimes almost a megabit. That's pathetic. You know, so upload is a problem. Okay, here we're looking at, those are pretty low speeds.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody's working their devices too, so that, you know, I'll apologize for whoever this provider is, but that's not a very robust speed.
So we can
in Amsterdam, you're looking at, what, 50 megabits down, right? And 20 up, depending on where you live. So this is where you start when you try to understand broadband and talk to people about broadband. How fast is it? What is the upload and the download? What does that mean? Well, one of the things it means is that your kid's movie doesn't get out on the internet as fast as Disney's movie gets to you when you go to get it. Okay, so there are a lot of issues there. If you were at the session when the FCC Commissioner Minion was there and somebody asked about net neutrality, those are very important issues when it comes to the future. But this isn't a political panel, it's more of a kids panel, so I'm going to talk about the device. But when we did our research, thanks to Zero Divide, they gave us the funding, and we went into a research mode. And we said, "Well, what are we gonna do to like wow these kids? Kids are way ahead of us. 50% of Americans are going to have smartphones by this Christmas. You know, I wonder about some of the statistics. I wonder if people include smartphones when they talk about internet statistics. When you think about how many Americans have smartphones, or a lot of small phones are smarter than some of the people using them. But bottom line is, we looked around and we said, okay, let's find a device that will be easy to marry to the internet, but will provide news reporting data that we need. So what we did was we took an iPod Touch. We did some research and we found, it's called an Owly, it's a housing. This is an iPod Touch in a housing, okay, with a nice Rode microphone. It's about a $200 microphone, shotgun microphone. And if I turn this on, okay, I have a camera. All right, this is the camera. Right, now look at, isn't Mitzi beautiful? Can you see her? I mean, there she is. Now, what I'm going to do is, I have to have a willing subject, someone to send a message to the people of Maui, Hawaii. Is anybody willing to do that? To represent this group?
Aloha!
Everybody want to say aloha? Yeah, let's do something simple like that. I'm going to hit record. Okay. Of course, it's not recording when I hit record. Here we go. All right, I'm recording. I'm going to turn the microphone on. That's always important to do that. Okay. What's nice about this device, it's a company in Canada called Vericorder. They provided a back end for this. So when I record with this device, I'll be able to send this directly via the internet to Maui, and at the end of the session, we can play it back. Okay? So I'm going to ask everybody to count of three to say, Aloha, Maui, from San Francisco. That's easy, right? Okay. One, two, three.
Aloha, Maui from San Francisco.
Wow, what a good class. You've been very good. Yeah, you get a gold star. All right, guys, we're going to see this in a few minutes, okay? All right, so now I just shut this off. But what this is, it has a little audio meter. So what you can do is obviously record your audio while you're recording. What we realize with really terrible upload speed like that, if you're out in some really bad Wi-Fi connection somewhere or using someone's hotspot, you're not going to be able to do a very long news piece, right? So we're teaching these kids to do like one, at the longest, maybe 2 minute dispatches from the field. And whether they be testimonials or investigative reports or performances, we're creating all these templates for them to use. And the idea is for us to have a constant source of news created by kids, by young people, all over Maui Nui, which is the three islands, and primarily from rural areas. Although we're getting a lot of response from metro areas right now, Amy, that we didn't expect. I mean, everybody on Maui wants one of these things. All the kids want them.
So, Jay, how much do those run?
All together with the rig, it's about $900 for this unit. Now, there's also some other costs. Vericorder in Canada handles the back end. For instance, what I just recorded, what I'm going to do is do a little magic in the device and send it to Vericorder, and they're going to translate the codecs, right? And they can send that codec to our television station, to our MauiTube site, to YouTube, to Vimeo, to any place we want to send it. So I have a curator sitting near a workstation in Maui that curates what comes in and then puts it back onto the web. So at the end of the session, we'll be able to view what we watched. Your beautiful performance, it was fabulous. So the idea is to have a constant source. Now, if you have an iPhone, they make this device for the iPhone as well. So iPhone, iPod touches, and this is just the first generation of this device. It has a wide-angle lens on it. I actually like taking that off. But what makes this really useful, it's an immediate news-gathering device, and it's only going to get better. So there is some licensing costs as well. There's a $60 cost for each device. Every device is licensed to handle the back end. That's the codec and the translation of the different video formats. And that's about what the costs are. There are some software costs as well, but they're really not that high. And it's primarily been, I think, designed originally for sort of university journalism programs. We call it Mojo. Get your Mojo working, get your Mojo on. Mobile journalism is what we call it. And it's extremely popular, and who knows where it can go. And also what's involved with the software is there's advertising or underwriting capability where you can also add that as a feature to the news program. So for instance, when we get a little bit more robust with our programs, we'll be able to find sponsors to help fund the program and keep it going.
All right, and have you got kids out in the field doing it?
We've had several classes. We have 25 of these units that we can deploy at any given time. We have about 10 units out right now on special projects, and we'll be deploying all of those units within the next couple of weeks. And then these kids go through like this four to five week program, bring the units back, and then a new group of kids come in, and then we develop certain kids to become mentors for the next group of kids. And then we identify a stipend money for that. So the idea is to propagate the concept and also make it available on other devices so that people can basically copycat what we're doing. And we're willing to export that model to anybody and everybody everywhere.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll play this back at the end.
All right. So let me just kind of run through a couple of these quick points. And Ingrid has arrived.
Hi.
Did you get stuck in a gas traffic?
I did.
Oh, so for those of you who don't know, there's a gas main that's leaking in San Francisco, and apparently traffic is shut down everywhere. So.
Oh,
that is what people are. You could be like Ira Levy. His wife is in the Judy Evans era, and they won't let her out, and they won't let him in. So.
Oh my God, that's awful.
So, the Zero Divide. This is just want to show you some of these resource pages, places you could go to look at some of these things that they're doing, and what you can also see is this a Spy Hop. Things that they've got here. This is Community Access Media Partnership, CMAP. Did I go by CMAP? CMAP, you know, so that they will be doing, they're in the, for those of you who don't know, Gilroy is the garlic capital of the world, Central California, and so they have high school football coverage up there. Portland Community Media.
What's interesting as Mitzi's going through this, I think, about, as we think about youth media programming and why organizations might want to be done youth media programming, why community access or community media organizations might want to do it, is that the reasons are really different depending on your community. So we're really excited about what Dorothy J is doing, because they're using youth media to get broadband access and excitement and sort of evangelize about broadband out to their rural communities and get the kids online, and that's going to help encourage the families and encourage the communities to want to be online. And it's going to need some, that also ties into advocacy for getting the broadband there in the first place. And their lens at looking at this through is hyper-local journalism, and that's really, really exciting. Now, Portland, on the other hand, their sort of connection to their community has been through a different lens, really youth development, I would say, and also youth prevention and health. And we were talking about how right now they're working with which agency?
Outside In, they serve homeless youth.
So serving homeless, so it's a nonprofit agency they're partnering with to serve out homeless youth. They're also considering how can media be used to address our gang issues in Portland. So Cease can speak to that. In Humboldt, Sean's here from Access Humboldt in Humboldt County. They're using youth media as, again, another way to get broadband out to their really remote communities and are coming at this from another lens. So as you think about whether or not you want to take on youth media, there's a lot of different doors you can get to youth media through workforce development. What are some of the other sort of issues that you're working on or tackling through youth media?
Several, social justice, definitely the workforce development, youth development, just frankly like having a platform for voice and expression, suicide prevention. I mean, the lists are endless.
Okay. So what I want to do is play for you, we'll see how this works. These are some of the other ones. Real Girls, they focus primarily on empowering women in Seattle, young girls in the Seattle area. This is the downtown television, the DC TV Center in New York. Got some things on there. This is DC TV in DC. They've got a whole youth training institute. And part of the reason why we put these up there, and these are all the links that you can find on the website, is that if you're looking for ideas or things to do, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can go out there and look at some of these. So we would like to try and create a wiki place for these. This is our local one. I want to point out for you, this is the Gandhi Brigade. We actually met them through our community program. We try to support them in different ways if they can. But they have spent a lot of time, we actually sort of fund them, I don't have it up here, but they've done a lot of ones where they had members of their own organization who were, who faced immigration issues because they're not in the country legally. They did one about a kid who, managed to get out of a gang, and then he got deported. And so they've done a lot of documentaries, and they run a youth festival. And in fact, in our case, the school stopped. Through a budget cut, they no longer have a digital media festival, and they have essentially taken over that function for the community. So here comes our video hour. We'll see if this works out. Here we go. Okay, so this is, we're going to kind of do a little sample of this. This is from SPNN.
My father worked at the Omaha.
We tried to load them so that they would be ready to play. They might not play. Well, we might have to bag that for tomorrow. We have one. Oh, great. Let's load that one up. All right. So while we're loading that up, why don't we go to the portion of our panel. You know, it worked so well in the testing.
Always does.
All right, so the first question really was sort of been thinking about, how many people in here have a youth media program now? Just Portland, Minneapolis, Swedes, Prince of Great. Great, look at these people, all so prepared. So the question really is, and these are just sort of to have out with the panel to sort of engage in this, is why should we support these programs? Why is it important to support these media programs?
Okay, well, there's about 100 reasons why I can think why. Coming from a access community, I just wanted to just give some context for how our youth programs work within the access center that we're part of. So we're St. Paul Neighborhood Network has a public access center, a community production department that produces media for our channels, as well as a youth program. And I've been with SPNN for a little over almost 15 years now. And when I started working at SPNN, there were just kind of one-off classes that would happen. And since then, we've developed our programs to have pretty consistent after-school, summer, and in-school and out-of-school media programs. And so to answer that question of why have youth media programs at your center, I mean, one reason for me is looking at the broader access community, the access center we're part of. It's important to be able to reach all members of that community, and having a youth programs specifically looking at the needs of youth in your community is a essential part of any center. And so our programs didn't just come out of like, oh, well, we need a youth program, so what are we going to do? What we did was we looked specifically at what are the needs of the youth in our community and what's missing. So we looked at the fact that there were mainly underserved youth in our communities who did not have access to opportunities to create media, to be creative and use media as a creative force, to also to talk about issues affecting youth in our communities, and to have a space where youth could gather. There were fee-based programs, but not free accessible programs to youth in our community. So a big reason for our programs, we're looking at what's missing, and then trying to conceive of programs that could fill those gaps.
Okay, Ingrid.
Hi. I didn't get to introduce myself earlier because I was stuck in traffic, but my name is Ingrid Dahl. I'm the new director of Next Gen Programs at the Bay Area Video Coalition. And if any of you want to come by, we have a public access station called SF Commons. A lot of people from NATOA have been coming in and doing a lot of training. We've got a lot of food there right now, so feel free to come by. We'd love your company. And I've been working in the youth media field now for about 4 or 5 years, and have produced a lot of interesting documentation, reports on the state of the youth media field, and a timeline, which I believe you're getting materials on. So I really highly believe in youth media. I think if you can just take a moment and remember when you were in high school, what did you do? I mean, for me, I went skateboarding. I tried to get like little clubs of skateboarding for all girls together. But really, if you don't have that initiative, and if you're battling the media, which is intensely penetrating the minds of a lot of young people right now, way more targeted than before because of their consumer power. I mean, they have about a couple billion dollars that they spend every year, so of course they're targeted. We have to do something about that, and I think serving and working with young people is helping them exactly what Nicola said, have a safe space where they can come and express and find their voices and gain a lot more confidence. Because if you believe in, at any level, some kind of social change or a really strong, empowering future, if we don't support and work in tandem with young people and use media, which is the way, the sort of transcript and language of the future, we're doing the future a disservice.
Anybody else want to add to that?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of really important aspects to that. It's not just giving kids gadgets. It's critical thinking. In many ways, I don't know where you live, but where I live, schools have completely failed us. Okay, the school's idea of media is you have some cameras in a studio somewhere, you lock them up. Kids never get to use them. Or if they do, they only get to use them during a small amount of time. And kids are going to go out and they're going to find their own cameras, they're going to find their own iPods, they're going to be using media, they're watching media, they devour media like everybody does. It's all around them all the time. But how do they put it in some kind of context? What we can help them is we can provide context for them and ethics. For instance, one of the reasons we decided to do news, instead of saying to the kids, oh, you can do whatever you want, well, they're already going to do whatever they want. We're going to teach them ethics. We're going to teach them news. We're going to teach them responsibility. We're going to teach them how to use these devices for social good, to communicate what their needs are and to be observant of what's going on in the communities in which they live. And the stuff they come up with is great. Way better than the stuff that you can come up with. The perspective is different depending on the age. So it empowers them when you give them a workflow. If you were at the lunch, the BayCat people. I mean, she said it. What is it? Was it 35 million kids are dislocated or disconnected from society? 35 million. That's a lot of kids. So if we could touch a few of those, give them some tools. And give them, empower them with how to use media effectively to communicate amongst themselves. We're doing a great job, and that's, I think, what most youth media programs aim to do: is to give these kids context on how to use media and how to deconstruct it. Looking at commercials, a lot of commercials are geared towards kids, right? Towards youth. Deconstructing those commercials on television and then having kids make alternatives to those commercials. Those kinds of, when you get into the curriculum, that's where the rubber meets the road. So it's not about gadgets. It's about touching young people in a way that they can help transform the society and have meaning for themselves and for us as well.
All right. So I quickly want to touch on, Ingrid mentioned the youth media reporter. There's the handout that you have. That is the timeline. There are several, there's a lot of good resources on here, but we thought, we print 35-page reports, but people take them in their luggage, or do they take the Ghirardelli chocolates and dish the paper? So you can go, and we'll add this link too there, and you can see that there is in here is the state of youth media, there's the timeline which you have, there is the National Summit, and there's also in the bottom, it's a little bit older, but there's an evaluation toolkit in here as well. So again, there's just resources that are out there for you to do this. And so now, hopefully with the show and tell, I want to thank Mark, who figured out that there's a DVD player at the back of the room. And so this is from SPNN in St. Paul.
Is there supposed to be the audio there?
There should be audio. Editing. Cuts. It's more dramatic with the music.
Yeah.
So I'll just narrate what's happening. The audio right now is basically just a description of this program. This is the summer intern program that I described earlier. So what you saw, that was just the intro.
So this is the actual kids interviewing people about what would you change. If there's one thing you could change about the cities, what would it be? And all of this worked perfectly when we tested it out.
Running, I just wanted to add one more thing about why do you use media. And I wish Kathy were here. Kathy Bisbee could see that. She can speak really eloquently about this. You know, as a community access station,
so much.
You know, most of the stations that I know have been introduced to through our work with the BTOP project, you know, your programs, a lot of them come out of the free speech movement. And in Gilroy, that's not what is jiving with your community. She's doing youth media because youth media is what's reaching her community. It's what makes youth.
Okay, Mark, can we turn the sound down a little bit?
Because the sound doesn't go with the thing, right? Her programming was connecting her community access station, her community media organization to her community is youth. That's what the folks in her area are concerned with and what gets them excited. And so she's using youth media as a way to really make her organization relevant to her community. I don't want to say using, but that's one way that she's making her organization relevant. So it's really important thinking about starting a youth media organization. There are many, many reasons why to do youth media. And of course, there's the outcomes for the youth and wanting to access and help the youth in so many ways. But also, what is it useful for your organization? Why does it matter to you and helpful for you in terms of connecting with your community members and also with the other agencies, the other government agencies that you can work with and partner with, your libraries, with your schools, how to get connected in your community, that youth media is a doorway to that as well.
Okay, Nicola, this is, I think, the piece about the Hmong culture, preserving Hmong culture that's playing now. Do you want to talk about that?
Why don't you rewind it? It's already past that.
All right, well, we might just ditch part of it was, is that we could have just had people come to the presentation, so we thought, well, look, everybody does video, so why don't we try to have a video? But somehow I think that maybe as an organization in TOA, we're very good on regulatory and lawyers, and we might have to work a little bit on our production engineering. So with that, let me, can I get back to the PowerPoint? Not that it's really that compelling. What we want to talk about a little bit is how do you go about this? And so one of the things that came up on the call we were talking about is what are the necessary conditions that you need to get a youth media program going or even to sustain it? And anyone who wants to start? Myra, you're annoying. And then Nicola?
I would say there are a couple things that are not necessarily intuitive. We found you need a pretty low adult to youth ratio, that this doesn't work so well with the classroom model, at least for us, of like 25 kids and one adult. It's just much more personal, it's much more intensive. Also, we don't have the equipment to sustain that, but beyond the equipment, I think it really requires a lot of individualized attention. So I would say that's one necessary condition. I think also to have young people produce meaningful media, we do short workshops, but the more meaningful workshops are a few months long. And so I think that also, a small group working over a sustained period of time also really helps.
Okay.
Okay, I need a list of 20 things. I won't say them all. One very important thing is to have a infrastructure that can support your youth programs. So that means if you're part of a larger access center, making sure that there's support from the larger organization to facilitate your youth programs. Nurturing and surviving. It might take some time to figure out what type of program works best in your community and develop partnerships, whether it's with schools or community organizations or nonprofits, park and rec, libraries. We've done all those different things over the years. So it might take time and having the support of the larger organization, either with facilities, with staff, and just making sure that the Access Center itself is a youth-friendly environment, I think is very important for a youth program to continue. Because you don't want the youth program to just be an island unto itself. It needs to be interconnected with the other aspects of your organization. So for instance, at SPNN, our youth volunteer and also get paid to work with our community productions. We have a very supportive relationship with our different departments. Also, our access center has grants with memberships to check out equipment after they've gone through our youth programs. So it's really important that youth feel welcome in the rest of the center. If you want those youth to be access members in the future and also be advocates for community media, they need to be welcomed in all aspects of the organization. So,
all right. Ingrid?
I published an article a couple years ago in Youth Media Reporter with Antoine Haywood, who used to be at People TV in Atlanta, an article that sort of showcased the 7 to 10 youth media programs that were actually hosted by community access or public access stations and centers. And I would definitely say that would be a really good resource if you want to check it out. I'd also say that there's over 100 youth media organizations nationally, and there are a couple other, for sure, just not necessarily identified as youth media organizations globally. So my suggestion, if I were to go out and try to figure out, so how do I actually get this started, is to do informational interviews with any of those number of youth media organizations, who most of which would be more than happy to spend anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes giving you their take on how to actually do it, given your context. For a year or two, I was actually going around to different regions in the nation and checking out youth media that was happening locally. Context is really, really important to factor into the ways that a youth media program or organization is established. Definitely the roots, if you're being attached into a public access broader station, what Nicola was just saying is really important. But I'd also just remember that if you have an innovative funding source that is not reliant just on applying and doing a lot of fund development, youth media has struggled with fund development. It is hard to fund. We are not talking about scale. We're definitely talking about supporting anywhere from 25 to 80 young people directly a year. This is a field that has been very mindful about that. We've never wanted to take the integrity of the field and compromise it in any way when there have been larger conversations about scaling this work. Like, why can't this go into schools? Why can't it be scaled? It's very tricky because we're not really talking about a program that operates always that successfully in school. Sometimes the school environment is really dangerous for a lot of young people. Even if we don't mean for the school environment to be dangerous, it is. So that said, I would definitely go and, I mean, I don't work for Youth Media Reporter anymore, but I definitely think that's a good start, just going on to youthmediareporter.org and just doing a search and seeing if any kind of issue or topic that really resonates for you or a region that resonates for you. That would be a good place to search. We wrote articles reflecting the Twin Cities, New Orleans, Chicago, the Southeast, the Southwest, areas pertinent to the New York City, a little bit of Portland, and definitely California. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about either the differences, the ups and downs of targeting, when we say youth, are we talking about middle schoolers, which is roughly 6th grade to 8th grade,
yeah, totally.
Or high school from 9 through 12. So that means that you've got kids that are either 11 to 13, or you've got kids who are 14 to 18. And if, I don't know if anybody considers 19 or 20 as part of your program.
I could speak to that really fast. I love middle school. I think middle school is definitely a place to focus. The youth media as a field hasn't always touched upon that age group. So if you're interested in working in that age group, I have my card. I'd love to talk to you about it because we piloted some programs in New York and in Newark, New Jersey, and they were awesome. I think I can speak for BAVAC. Right now, we support youth from 14 to 19 years old, and starting in January 2012, we're actually going to be focusing on the community college demographic for those youth who are at risk of failing, specific to low-income Latina and Asian communities. So that will be extending our reach from 19 to 25.
All
right. So we work with 10 to 20-year-olds. Our middle school students do wonderfully. And I have here DVDs with about 5 videos made by our middle school students, so if you're interested in seeing those, I'd be happy to give them to you. I will say that I personally have also taught small children, and I've taught them animation, and it's doable, so.
Okay, we're gonna try on the audiovisual once again. And which one are we going for?
If you click on human rights, it's gonna take you to a submenu.
Is that in the back?
I'm unable to go to the menu.
It's worse than working with
dogs. It says you just gotta play it and skip forward.
If you play it, maybe you can scroll by chapter.
Yeah. There you go.
So that's not quite what we want, but I would say do what you can.
Can you forward that score?
And see if you can scroll by chapter, maybe. So the next one?
Human rights.
So the one out, it should be the one out. Yeah, it should be this one. Let's see if we get audio.
Let's see if we get the audio.
Speaks out for me.
Oh, no, that's not it. I mean, we can watch it, but it's probably not the best example.
This is the utopia.
You want to keep going?
Can we go to the next chapter?
Keep on going.
All right, so we'll keep talking and see if they can...
Do you want me to... this might be it.
Let's see.
And we'll see if we can get audio with it. It's
And on your evaluation forms, which I should tell you to do at the end, you should say that Nintendo ought to work on their audiovisual a little bit.
Do you want me to give an overview of or should we have
that? Yeah, I maybe just have it playing. I mean, part of the structure of the video was just to give you a sense that these are young people doing these kinds of things, but it's a lot more than what you might think that young people are engaged in. A lot of very complex social issues. So, now we'll just go back to the... We tried.
But if you'd like to see it, I can give you a DVD or we have it on our video page.
And most of these things actually are available on their websites that we do actually have those links to. So why don't we talk a little bit about, how many of you, are you partnering with the schools? Do you partner with other community groups? How does that happen?
We use photography to document our findings. This is what we saw.
We have audio now.
When we began exploring this neighborhood, my first impression was that it looked like a checkerboard. On one block, there are trees, occupied houses, and vegetable gardens. But if you walk a couple blocks over, you see unkempt grass, litter everywhere, and abandoned homes. There are so many empty houses around here. If all of them were filled with families, this area would be bustling with activity. Now, it's like a ghost town.
We saw a lot of police officers and security cameras when we were walking around. So it makes us think that this neighborhood might not be safe. The security cameras are probably put up to protect residents, but we wonder how the cameras make them feel.
Do crime and the security cameras in this neighborhood have a big influence on the people who live here? Do they feel that they have to protect themselves and keep distant from other people? When we tried to interview people from the neighborhood to find answers to our questions, many didn't want to talk to us. It feels like there's a mask over this community, a barrier between outsiders like us and the people who live here. Unless you live here, you might not get the chance to see what's really underneath. We noticed that the food options in the neighborhood appeared to be lacking. On our walks, we saw fast food like KFC, Burger King, Popeyes, and corner stores, but we didn't see many grocery stores or markets. We learned that this community is situated in a food desert, which means that there are few healthy and affordable options for the residents when it comes to nutrition. If Johns Hopkins, a hospital known for its quality healthcare, is located in this community, then why aren't there healthier food options or a cleaner, safer environment for the residents? In It's obvious that there's a divide between Hopkins and the rest of the Middle East. We really noticed it when we stood on the median strip on Broadway Avenue. On one side of the street, there are vacant houses, trash, and blue light police security cameras. And on the other, there is Johns Hopkins Hospital with its manicured lawns, large new buildings, and security guards.
The work put into keeping Hopkins clean and safe shows that someone values the people who are here and thinks that they are important. But if the surrounding neighborhoods are not as clean or safe, does this mean the Middle East residents are less valued, less important?
So we can pause there. So how old were the kids who made that video?
Between 11 and 15. So they were introduced to the concept of human rights, and then they did a lot of neighborhood walks, and they did a lot of coming back and talking about, looking at their photographs and talking about what they'd seen, and going out and photographing more, and doing a lot of reflective writing. For some of the kids who didn't express themselves very easily through writing, the teacher kind of interviewed them or just recorded their thoughts on a Zoom recorder, and then we had the intern transcribe it so that they could get their thoughts out that way. So it was a pretty intensive process, but the reflection and the observations really came through the dialogue with the kids and the reactions to their photos.
Okay. So we were going to talk about the partners. So is anyone working with schools, or do you work with different groups? Anyone?
Well, we're working with a lot of different schools. I was going to mention, I had to step out to upload, to call my guys to make sure the video got to Maui. It's there. And I actually videotaped Amy when she was talking, because she was more interesting than you guys, sorry. partners are really, really important. We work with a lot of different schools. I found that where I live, charter schools are pretty dynamic. The teachers are more dynamic. The kids are more motivated, so charter schools really help because they tend to be more open with their curricula. Also, what we try to do is we try to build partnerships with really anyone that comes along. We have an economic development board. We do a lot of kids' camps, and from these kids' camps, we find mentors. Sometimes those mentors are volunteers. They don't have to be teachers. They don't even have to be affiliated with schools. So I think partnerships are really, really important when you can hook up mentors with kids, and you can mix ages, but we find that the real young kids are a lot different, obviously, to work with than the older kids. But when you mix them up and you get them into small groups and teams, they tend to, I think, be more prolific. And then what happens is, of course, they go off to college and never see them again. But It really is important to develop mentors and partners and partner with other groups. Otherwise, if your staff's doing it all the time, you're going to get pretty burned out. So it's really, really important to, I think, motivate and work with other partners. We do that a lot. And a lot of schools come to us, and basically the teachers will say, well, I really can't get this done in my school. Can you guys do it for us? And of course, one of the interesting problems, I noticed there were some public access people in here, is in our situation, we give a lot of money to the schools to do educational access, but yet they don't do it, and we're doing it anyway. So the funding is always kind of it's hard to double up like that, but we're more than happy to do it, because that's one of the reasons why we're there.
Jim, you had a question?
I do have a question.
Actually, you know what I'm going to ask is, if you can use the mic, it's mainly so that when they record it, in the recording, the question will come out.
Okay. But I don't want to disturb the presentation. At the point you get where you can address when I'd like to ask.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the time. Nicola, do you want to talk a little bit about the AmeriCorps, how that fits in? And I think a couple of you guys have either AmeriCorps or VISTA. And how many people in here are familiar with the AmeriCorps and the VISTA programs? Okay. How many people have any members, AmeriCorps members or VISTA members? Okay.
How many are alumni?
I thought.
Well,
I wanted to just affirm something that Ingrid said a few minutes ago about the importance, I think actually Mayor commented too, about the importance of a high ratio of mentors to youth in when running youth media programs. It's really highly essential that you've got a high ratio of adult or older youth mentors working with youth who are learning media production skills. Otherwise, it ends up just being more like you're babysitting, because you really can't, or you end up not being able to have the youth be empowered to edit and create their own projects. So I've seen both of those pitfalls happen when there's not an adequate ratio of mentors to youth. So one way we've been able to address this issue is by having AmeriCorps members working with our program. So over the past few years, we've had one or two members working with our programs and assisting with those programs. So we also have a program staff who leads the program, and then the AmeriCorps member assists with the program, and then over the year, as they develop their own mentoring skills, they're able to facilitate workshops on their own and do outreach and coordinate other media programs with youth at our organization. So I would encourage you to consider AmeriCorps members as a way to assist with that, with getting a adequate ratio of mentors to youth. I would also caution you to not just consider an AmeriCorps member someone who would come in and just lead a program. That often a member may need more support and curriculum help and training support than just being able to just do it on their own. So that's one pitfall that I've seen happen before.
Okay, Ingrid?
Back to partnerships?
Either way.
Okay.
We'll make it quick.
By the way, do you have any of our content, media content, or no, we don't
have any? I have the, what we had trouble was with the internet. I have the link that you sent us.
And the Dropbox files, I don't know if you...
No, I don't have the Dropbox files.
That's fine.
But what we will try to do is post those things and post those links, and we'll have it for Natoa so that people can go and get that as a resource and take a look at that.
Perfect.
They're also useful if you're looking at pitching a program. It can be useful to have a clip or something that you can just show that gets people immediately engaged more so than just kind of talking about it or the words. So that could be a useful link too.
But about partnerships, I think that partnering with youth media organizations, or if you want to partner for your youth media organization, is really critical. People are very, very open-minded to partner. It's an important time, especially in this current economic situation and the lack of funds that are around there. There's no need to be competitive at this point. It's all about sharing resources and identifying where the strengths and uniqueness lie in each organization and program. I've been finding, too, that once that's identified, it's like, oh, cool, you're working with beginning youth filmmakers, we're dealing with advanced youth filmmakers. Perfect. Let's create a situation where our alums work with you and your alums can come and enter our programs. Also, BAVAC provides a free teacher training. It's a week-long program for a few teachers who are interested in learning audio and video, and then they actually get year-long school-based curriculum that we provide for free. So we have about 22 sites in schools that are using this curriculum and training. We are finding that actually our curriculum and training is really useful for ESL learners because of the visual quality to it all, which is really interesting. So we're like, wow, maybe we should be pushing some of our curriculum more into that direction.
And is that curriculum available on your website?
It is. You can totally get it. And all it's right. Just bayback.org/nextgen. It's kind of a lot to navigate, but you'll find it. Or email me.
Okay, so let me actually go through speed round Jeopardy here. So I just want people to understand, if you could just kind of quickly say, roughly, you know, how many people does it take to run this? If you want to break that down into, you know, we have this many staff, and then we've either got AmeriCorps, Vista members. How many kids are you roughly serving? Annual budget? And, you know, where is your source of that funding coming from?
Should I start from here?
Sure.
Okay.
So just our youth programs cost $1.2 million a year. We have three programs, 80 youth are directly served in that. We have three full-time staff people, two part-time staff, and then during the school year, we contract out four instructors for our digital pathways and four TAs to go alongside that. And then there's me.
And what's the source of the funding on that $1.2 eye-popping?
Many. National Science Foundation, some from Mozilla Foundation, lots of foundations, Family Foundation, Stone, Kimball, many. We have them on every single DVD of any of our films. You can actually see the list, Adobe.
And how many years into the program are you now?
Digital Pathways started in 1999, and the factory and bump started in 2004. So
it's not like you just come in and start.
Oh, we've had a long learning curve. It's been great.
Okay.
That's taken a while.
Okay,
our the budget for our youth media programs within SPNN is around 160. And we have three full-time staff complement in our department, and one core member right now. And in terms of our funding, we receive funding from a number of foundations. We also receive in-kind support from the city, besides our cable franchise, but also through Job Corps funding, for instance.
And how many kids, roughly, do you serve?
Okay. And we serve around 100 youth in our program per year.
Okay.
So White Angle's annual operating budget at the moment is around $350,000. We have two full-time administrators, the executive director and myself. We have two full-time teachers slash program coordinators, so they do all of the outreach, all of the kind of administrative work around their programs. We have two full-time AmeriCorps folks, who one of them runs a program, one of them is assistant teaching program. So six full-time staff, two of whom are AmeriCorps. We have a part-time bookkeeper, we have a part-time communications person, we have a lot of interns. In our core programming, we serve about 40 young people per semester. And then we also, that includes summer, so let's say trimester. And then about a third of our budget at the moment comes from contract or fee-for-service work. So that's money we get for doing programming in schools, programming with other community-based organizations. And then we don't get national funding yet. We're pretty little, but we get sort of Baltimore and Maryland, Mid-Atlantic Foundation funding.
So Unified works with youth media organizations, some of the very advanced and well-established organizations like BAVAC and Youth Radio with significant budgets and staff, two organizations that are really startups. And I would really encourage you to tap your colleagues here from Portland Community Media, Jay Itakaku, and Sean at Access Humboldt, because they have the real experience on the ground about how community media centers can take off and pursue youth media programming. And Sean in particular has done a great work in terms of using AmeriCorps volunteer to help launch the program by getting a sense of the landscape, getting a sense of who the potential community partners are, and so on. Also Kathy Bisbee tomorrow. In terms of funding, it's important to recognize there's not a lot of youth media funding. If you Google youth media, foundation support for youth media, you're not necessarily going to find it, especially at the national level. Most of the groups that we work with have put together a diverse range of funding streams, and it's very often local. So they're working with their cities, with their county government agencies, they're working with their state agencies, for example, public health agencies, drug and alcohol prevention agencies to gain funding. They're also working with their libraries, with their schools, with local nonprofits. So the funding is really a putting together networks. It's partnering. It's community foundation support. It's local family foundation support. A lot of it's very media, and again, targeting their youth media programs to address their community needs. And that's where the connections come for their partnerships, and also where the funding comes. Because the organizations they're reaching out to recognize that this youth media program can help address issues of concern in their community.
We're a cable television access corporation. We get about $1 million a year, mostly from franchise fees and grants. Our education department, we don't break it out that way in terms of funding, but I'm guessing it's around a couple $100,000 a year when you add it all together. We're looking at one education director and then one person full-time on the BTOP, the Zero Divide grant on the broadband adoption, an assistant. So we're looking at like 3 to 5 people depending on what we're doing. Like I said, we do a lot of camps, so we'll shift staff over to education and then back to production. We're looking at a number of places where we get money. As I mentioned, franchise fees. We do some contract work. The BTOP funding, I think, Amy, if I'm correct, was like $52,000 a year, which I think we augment with at least 100% match with our funds. We've also received money from the Office of Hawaiian Affairs in Hawaii, and we also, believe it or not, got a ton of money to hire interns from the DOD. The DOD was giving away the stimulus money to hire kids, so we were able to use a lot of kids last summer for quite an extended period of time, and the money was all funded through the DOD. So if another stimulus round comes along, keep your eyes open, there might be some money for youth training programs.
All right. Yep.
One other thing that's interesting, as Amy and Ingrid mentioned, there isn't a lot of direct youth media funding, so we have to kind of be creative. So for a single program, we may apply for direct service kind of, direct service sort of social service kind of programming. We might apply for education after school funding. We may apply for social justice sort of systemic change funding. And it'll all be the same program, but we can kind of, we can kind of spin it so that it fits into multiple different categories because there isn't funding that is a perfect fit. So,
all right. So let me
put
arts
funding to
that. Arts funding. Okay. There are some questions in the audience. Yes? No? Yes? I don't know your name. I'm sorry.
Dennis.
I'm Missy, and you're Dennis.
Yes. From anyone?
Sure.
Do any of you have any policies, procedures that you run with these youth media programs? And if so, could you give some examples of some of the issues or problems that you may have come across that you would might want to think about if we're thinking of starting something like that up?
Editorial issues? Content-wise, procedures as far as checking out things, coverage of stuff.
One thing that I don't know how many people here do stipends, but I know a lot of youth media programs do stipends or offer some kind of pay to kids, and it really helps kids who come from low-income backgrounds to participate rather than getting a job. So that's kind of procedural. I also will say that we don't tend to rent out our equipment to kids, but we do have a couple of our older cameras that we will let some of our kids who've been working with us for a while check out and take them. But in general, there's usually a staff person with the young person when they're shooting.
But so in terms of the policy, do you pick the subjects for the kids? Do you have you can come in and do anything?
Do you editorialize anything? Do you just tell them?
Well, it depends on the program. We have program. Almost everything the kids do gets on our air, on our station. So most of the stuff is guided. And we stay away from things, obviously, like obscenity and commercialism and libel, things like that. So, and drugs. So we do have basic agreements that people sign. There's liability waivers, there's parental waivers. I mean, basically standard stuff. But there's pretty free rein creatively. So there's not much of we're not stepping on the creativity, but we do have, obviously, legal agreements with organizations that we work with. And kids, obviously, if they're under 18, parents have to sign for liability waivers and that kind of thing.
And is that material available on your website?
Yeah, I think most of it is. Most of the policies and procedures are on our website. And if they're not, then I'll make sure they get up there so you can read them.
All right. Anyone else?
Well, in all of our after-school or and summer media programs, the youth works in a collaborative process to identify the topics that they'll be exploring in their media. So there's not just a open-ended, here's the camera and go make something. It's just more of a process of identifying issues, working together to understand those issues more deeply. Most of our programs are based on community issues, so we might bring in experts who are activists in the community or are media makers in the community to explore those issues with them. And then we also do a lot of field trips where we bring the youth out into the community to explore issues and meet different organizers, and from that process they will identify issues and to create media around those topics. I just wanted to add that we also do have a program called SPNN. Open Lab, it's also called SOUL, and that's a program where youth can come in and work on their own independent projects, and there's a specific process. They have to fill out a form and give a timeline for when they'll finish their project, and that's a little more open-ended, and so that might be something similar to what you're talking about in terms of being able to check out equipment and bring it home.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah. Hi. Earlier this week, I heard a description of a conversation that the mayor of Kansas City had with his son at the time they were considering the Google initiative. And the mayor was talking about some regulatory and other issues, and he was hemming and hawing, and his son said to him, "Dad, it's a gigabit." And then he hemmed and hawed a little bit more, and the son said to him, "Dad, you've got to do this. This is a gigabit." And a light bulb went on for me. We have now 19 states that have restrictions on what local governments can do to bring broadband, high capacity broadband and other things to their communities. And we are probably looking at a major effort across the country this year some sources to restrict even more local governments across the country. And the light bulb that went on for me hearing that conversation was that young people should have a voice in that dialogue. And it's, you know, they have a huge interest in this. And so how do we do this? I know youth media is an important part of this, but so are many other things. And I'd like to ask all of you to help me figure this out. And just as a start, if you have some thoughts now, but I'd like to follow up with you. How do we enlist young people using all of the media that they use, including social media, including the things you're expert in, to step up and speak out on these issues?
I'd say one answer is just thinking about your example. You know, Dad, it's a gigabit. Dad, you got to do this. It's really also the responsibility for adults to question their stereotypes in the way that they might silence young people and just turn an ear and not listen to them, or not even take their amazing, innovative creativity, not even give that a chance. So I think part of it is our responsibility as adults. We have to question the way that we shut opportunities off for young people and not even consider them part of our sphere of colleagues. They are. I'd say secondly, it's really about, well, if there are 100 youth media organizations out there doing the work and they're located all across the nation, you got an army already.
Right.
Let's just put everybody in touch.
And I mean the highest respect for young people, and how do we do that? So,
but I think when you go to your Rotary Club,
yeah,
right, you could say, hey, how come my kid can't upload his video at a decent speed?
How do we get your kid to come to the Rotary Club to say that himself?
Right. Well, that's what I mean. So part of this education that we're talking about is learning the media that we're working with, how it works, so we can sort of deconstruct it, so the kids know, so not only the kids, but the parents know how to deal with it, because we're force-fed all this stuff, we don't understand it. So if we can break it down, I've gone to Rotary Clubs and just put up a speed test, and the Rotary Club's talking about it the rest of the meeting, because for the first time, people in that room understand why a slow upload is going to inhibit their kids' ability or your ability to communicate. So those things are really important, and getting the kid to come to the Rotary Club is a great idea. A smart kid to come to the Rotary Club and explain that is, that's worth its weight in gold. So I think that's all of our jobs, really.
Right, and how do we get them to...
I think we're going to have to...
Okay.
Yeah, because we're already over the time a little bit here, and I know that people want to continue that conversation over the cocktail hour that will be happening.
I'd love to talk to you folks or anyone else here, form a committee to talk on after today about this as well.
Okay.
Thank you all.
And I would, before we get to this sort of, I want to add maybe a closing, and we're going to try to check out Jay's video, see if we can get that. I do want to encourage you that if you're interested in having more of these kinds of programs or the wiki, to use those yellow forms that you have your evaluation forms, because they do pay attention to those. If you're interested in further follow-up in future conferences, or if you'd like to see one of the NATOA, the eNATOA seminars focused on those things, I really recommend that you put those comments. It matters that you put them in writing and submitting those.
So, Mitzi?
Yes.
And there will also be an email sent about both eNATOA and when we get around to planning conference again. So, if you don't jot it down, once we jot it down, if you forget and think of something, then just let us know.
Okay, so now, using technology
gets them excited. And so she's using youth media as a way to really make her organization relevant to her community. I don't want to say using, but that's one way that she's making her organization relevant. So it's really important thinking about starting a youth media organization. There are many, many reasons why to do youth media. And of course, there's the outcomes for the youth and wanting to access and help the youth in so many ways. But also, what is it?
Okay.
What is the youth?
It works. It works.
That's the point.
So did you load the Aloha, or did we?
No, I didn't load it.
Yeah, you didn't make the cut.
I screwed up. I only have 9 fingers, so I pressed the wrong button.
Oh, jeez.
All right, so let me ask, do we have any other questions from the audience? Okay, so I guess just if you want to, we were going to sort of do the best and the worst of, but if you have a parting thought about folks in here who might be looking at trying to expand or do that, do you have a tip or... Something you want to impart, and then we'll go in reverse, and we'll start with Jay this time.
You know, you got to listen to the kids, and you got to get some. You got to get people together that are going to help motivate each other. You know, the old way of doing things, I think, is out the window. I think it's pay attention to the new technologies and listen to what they have to say, and then empower them to say it. Pretty simple.
I don't have anything to add. I think there's a lot of amazing resources out there. And Youth Media Reporter, one more plug for that. Where are all these links going to be exactly,
Mitzi?
Just getting online and seeing this is a really great way to spend a half hour, an hour of your time.
We can do is all these links is that PowerPoint, and we'll just dump them into there and then load it on the NATOA website, so you'll have that. And actually, if I can get from the panelists the information that you had about your staffing, the little short things, we'll try to add that on there as well, so people have that. I will add the contact info for our panelists, which is in the White program, I believe. You can Google them, because they're all very accessible. But we will try and put that in there so that you have a resource to start working from.
I would say this. I've been doing youth media for many years, and it is not necessarily intuitive, and there are a lot of questions that arise that are not necessarily simple. I find it to be really complicated, a really complex thing to navigate. And so if it feels confusing, I think that's normal. And I think probably all of us would welcome you to contact us. I'm always really excited to just talk through the complications of this, and I'm sure other people here are also.
My thought just escaped me. I would encourage you to not define media rigidly when you're thinking about a youth media program. There's a lot of different ways that media can be created. We're doing a lot more online stuff, a lot more social networking stuff. We're doing stenciling. We're making flipbooks. Think broadly when you think about how to create media, and also who to collaborate with. There's a lot of different possibilities out there, and they'll take you to really exciting places.
I would just end that because youth media is so much about a process, like we really highly value process over product. We love our products to be rad and awesome, but and award-winning, which a lot of them are, but the process is important. I would like to say and suggest that I've been to a lot of conferences, I'm sure a lot of you have. Do yourself a favor on your plane ride home, or if you have just 10 minutes to yourself, just think about and brainstorm and visualize, well, okay, what would it look like if I actually had a youth media program here, and start to process that yourself. Just take 10 minutes. It could be during, after the cocktail hour, again on your way home. That would, I think, make all of us here feel like our efforts in preparing for this panel would be so radly paid off, so thank you.
All right, and I'm gonna beg the audience's indulgence for one last thing, is what I'd like for each of you to do is to turn to somebody that you don't know in this room and introduce yourself, because all of you are here because you're interested in those programs, and one of the best ways to do it is to talk to your peers and to share ideas. So to close, thank you all for coming, and if you would, just turn and introduce yourself to something that you don't know.
I'm going to be on the California.